And good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to Open Source as Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz. Nice to be with you, and I am not standing. Did I get all that in there? Yes. It's like not an anagram, but a...
Good one.
Yeah.
Open Source is the CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Today, we're going to catch up, we're going to be launching our round-robin interviews with candidates running for city council in this current election, and we're starting with Dan Gibson and Charlene Downey of Ward 1, James Gordon in Ward 2, and Dominique O'Rourke in Ward 6. But first, we hope to maybe leave Doug alone for a couple of weeks.
Just not possible.
Leave your Dougs alone. But Monday there was the announcement of the verdict of the lawsuit to stop Bill 5. And the judge said, based on a couple of charter grounds, it could not go forward. Problem number one was the candidates were sort of in the middle of a campaign when all of a sudden the rules had changed. And the other one had to do with a representational issue, which is that all of a sudden Toronto City Councillors will be representing tens of thousands of more people, which would be a tremendous unfairness. Because I'm sure if you are remotely interested in this issue, you've probably seen charts and stuff comparing how many people the 25 Toronto City Councillors will represent versus how many people our City Councillors here represent, or our city Councillors in Kitchener or London or Ottawa even. So Doug Ford said, no, you, judge, aren't elected. Me, Doug Ford, elected. and I guess somebody told him about the Constitution, that there's a thing called the notwithstanding clause, because I don't think Doug was the sort that aced social science. So
it was high school level stuff, isn't it? Although he didn't finish Humber College, did he? I don't know. He took business. Maybe you don't talk history in business class. It doesn't matter. His background doesn't matter. He's the premier, right?
Yeah.
And I think he must have been tipped off or vaguely remembered that there was the nuclear option, as everybody's calling it. It's like, well, I'm not going to get my way, so I'm going to press the button. Now, this is confusing and chaotic, and we should mention that it's actually, we are recording on Wednesday this week, so in the past 24 hours, something has possibly happened, so forgive us if we're...
We can't see the future.
If we're talking, well, potentially, if we're talking about something like, those guys are so behind, it's actually Wednesday right now. But so much happened today.
Yeah.
Chaos at Queen's Park, people getting ejected from the chambers in this morning. A couple of seniors let out in handcuffs by the sounds of it. And then in the afternoon, the opposition party, NDP, were banging on the desks. Like, it reminded me of Khrushchev with his shoe, just kind of doing the... They were all ejected. It wasn't clear to me, because it was sort of cramming before the show, as to whether the Liberals and or Mike Schreiner were ejected. I don't believe so. I didn't hear anything about that.
Mike Schreiner put out a press release, actually, before we recorded.
He didn't get lobbed out. He didn't go Khrushchev with the shoe.
Schreiner stands with opposition parties against suspending the charter. I am pleased that the three opposition parties at Queen's Park all voted against first reading. I mean, I guess that's just he's against it.
He's against, but he didn't get lobbed out, so it was quite chaotic. I was following Lauren Pelly, who says you read on top of these things, Twitter and otherwise. And she was saying that the old school media, because I still watch CBC News generally when we're not in here, the province... It seems that the province has appealed the cuts ruling by the judge, and there's a motion to be heard on September the 18th in court. And that's what's kind of not making sense about this, because you would think, okay, they're appealing it. Why wouldn't you just wait till the 18th? Because there is a possibility, I don't know how great, that they may win on appeal.
Sure.
And then it wouldn't have to be all of this. The other thing that happened too, which is confusing as hell, is that the nominations are back on for the 25 positions, and that is extended to 2 days past the royal assent of this bill. So we've gone from nominations were open, Nominations were closed, then it was back to 47 seats, and now it seems to be they're back to 25 seats, and the nomination period is... So the nomination period has changed three times and might possibly change again.
Yeah.
There's people campaigning in one ride. Well, I'm on the 47-seat model, I'm campaigning here, but on the 25-seat model, I'm campaigning here. It is absolute chaos,
yeah,
which... To me, it makes it seem like this whole thing is thrown, regardless of what Ford wanted to achieve with this or will achieve with this by the sounds of it, because it sounds like there's no stopping this process now.
Unless there are PCs who want to break ranks, because yeah, he said it was going to be an open vote, but so far that's not happened.
No, it's probably not going to happen. Unless there's a rebellion or Trudeau and the Liberals get involved and use the equivalent of their nuclear option, which is just smacking down any province.
Yeah.
But I think in both cases... These are things that are left for issues, or should be at least, of utmost pressing security, serious issues. I'm thinking War Measures Act level kind of thing going on in your province. Not, I hate the council that I was a part of and I want to mess with it.
Right. I mean, I think the language is that it's supposed to be for like reasons of like extreme like national unity issues, like things like if the court strikes down a law, then all of a sudden like chaos will erupt, like actual chaos, like, you know, cars burning in the streets kind of chaos. We have to, you know, contain a situation. Not, you know, I'm fiddling with one city council in a province of 444 city and town councils. It's just it just seems like chaos. Whereas the reasonable thing would do, and I was reading an article, I think it was in The Globe, somebody who knows about legal procedures and things, says, you know, the judge's points probably could have been countered if they had taken the time to actually do this and just say, like, for the next election, this is what we're going to do, done the consultations, gotten the feedback, gotten their ducks in a row, but then they walk into court and say, we're cutting the size of council by 25 seats right before an election. The judge is like, why? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah, and this sort of plays to the whole, let's call it the Trump style, because it generally is. Trump just does whatever, and then his people kind of say, well, and as, you know, as leaking out now with the Woodward story and whatnot, that Trump just says, let's do this. And I wonder if that's what happened here, because that's what it seems like. Now, the party is backing him on this for now, but is this the thin edge of the wedge in that if this is the way that Ford wishes to govern,
right?
Will there be rebels in the ranks that will say no to this? Mulroney Sr., Brian Mulroney, chimed in, and he was playing it a bit delicate, saying that he didn't talk to his daughter, which I personally don't believe.
Yeah.
Very hard to believe, saying that, you know, I'm not too big a fan of the notwithstanding clause. I believe Bill Davis came out today and was like, yeah, you know what, like, you probably shouldn't. This is like high level conservatives, classic conservatives, traditional conservatives coming out and saying, yeah, this probably isn't the way to play this. So there's a bit of dissent there, I guess, from the emeritus people. But
but if you're whipping out the notwithstanding clause 2.5 months in, you've got it, you know, what can't you use it for? I think, is this going to happen every time he gets stymied by a judicial process? He's just like, oh, unelected judge, forget it. We're just going to use a notwithstanding clause. And maybe to put a button on this, I think we owe Stephen Harper an apology. Because, I mean, Stephen Harper passed a lot of stuff that the court said no to, and he never once said the word notwithstanding.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Stephen Harper was obviously trying to remake Canada in an image he found more palatable. But he understood that the court was the last word. And yeah, he tried to fiddle with the political process of appointing a Supreme Court justice.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not the United States. And he at least knew enough to know that, you know, the 60% of the electorate that was never going to vote for him were not going to go for that.
Well, and that's exactly it. The numbers game. It's pretty much 60% of the electorate didn't vote for Doug Ford. He and his people keep using the word democracy, democracy, democracy.
Mandate.
2.3 million people elected me. Yeah, and it's like 3.3 million people voted for somebody else, right?
And then like 10 million people didn't vote for anyone.
Yeah, you want to play, yeah, because they're babies. you want to play the numbers. It's like, you know, the numbers aren't really in their favor. Granted, they are the government. Rather than say democracy, 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 it's like, well, we're the government, so we are just going to do that.
Yeah.
It's they keep playing the democracy card. And the way the tone of Doug Ford is he's just stopping short of saying libtard. You know, it's like, those downtown left-wing NDP councillors.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the grudge, it's a grudge match. He just keeps going. The special activists. Like, he just comes up with this stuff. It's like, where are you getting this from? Are you, like, following, you know, the alt-rightish types online or what? That's the tone, right? So... I don't know. And what was the other thing? It was, too, yeah, these people are unemployable in the private sector. It's like, how do you know?
Yeah.
He's making it sound like everybody's just on Toronto City Council because they want a you know, sunshine list level job. It's like, I'm sure a lot of them have more qualifications than he does.
First
on
of
paper.
All, ask your buddy Mamo about his last private sector job. And second of all, ask somebody like Stephen Harper and Jason Kenney, people who, like, hate the government but have worked in it all their lives. It's...
Yeah. Poly-ev. They've never done anything else.
Oh,
you're a poli-sci grad, then you go understudy for somebody, and then you end up
and not MP. For nothing, but who gave Doug Ford his first job?
Well, yeah.
That's, oh, I mean, that's hilarious.
Bootstraps.
He's bootstraps. And he's the CEO of Deco Labels because, you know, his two older siblings were hot messes. Like, I hate to put it that way because of their issues, but honestly, that's why. We're going to wrap that issue up because there's actually too much to talk about, but we do have... speaking of playing the democracy card, we have
it's what we do.
We have our first set of council interviews, and we're going to start off by going to well, Scotty's wearing the uniform, is the ward t-shirt there,
the ward.
So we're going to go there first, and we're going to hear from a friend of the show, Dan Gibson, who's running for re-election. So let's hear what Dan Gibson had to say.
I guess there are a number of curiosities with your ward. And I talked about this with another candidate, that there's a quality to Ward 1 that is very bifurcated, where you have downtown, where it starts downtown and it stretches eastward to fairly new areas of the city. So you come from having been on council for 4 years, you sort of know what it takes to sort of represent those disparate areas. So can you talk about that a little in terms of what... being a counselor for downtown while being a counselor for new suburban areas the city is like.
Great point. It's I always love having conversations with you, Adam, because you always ask great questions. That's an excellent question. I've always said when I go door-to-door or when I'm out at events, Ward 1 is the most diverse ward in our city. We have, demographically, we are the most diverse. We have, in terms of socioeconomic regimes, we're... wildly diverse, and politically we're so diverse. If you go from the East End all the way into the downtown, you meet everybody. And having an opportunity to represent them has been rewarding for me. People will always try and slot you into something on council, and I've really appreciated, and I've tried to maintain my personal views on provincial or federal politics are parked.
Right.
I try my very best to maintain my focus on municipal issues because there's enough here to focus on, and allowing people to see me as an independent and thoughtful and competent decision maker for the city. I always say the city has elected me for my opinions on Guelph, and I try and stick to that motto. So that I believe that plays well with families and residents in Ward 1. Being as diverse as it is, and I hope I can continue.
Well, speaking of that, it always seems that Ward 1 gets the most number of contenders. And I think somebody in one of the Facebook groups I follow actually crunched the numbers, that it seems like in every election we carry over one incumbent and somebody new comes in. And I'm not cursing you in your electoral pursuits, but it does seem like, I don't know, the ward is always grasping for, you know, some fresh bloods or from new representation. And I'm wondering, is that in the back of your head a little? Like, what is the ward looking for that maybe you or even Bob aren't doing? Or
right.
What your predecessors haven't been able to do that, you know, has elevated you to this position?
Right, right. So a little bit of advice that my father gave me before stepping into politics, and it's only his advice, is that do not change... who you are. Be exactly the same person you are on the campaign trail afterwards, as hard as that might be. A lot of people do change. Mm. Post-election, you'll see change. And I have made a really strong point of presenting myself for who I am and continuing that post-election. And my, again, the advice from my father was, you will sleep better at night. You'll be able to shake people's hands and look them in the eye and know that you haven't changed over the course of the term.
Mm-hmm.
And that has really helped. My supporters support me. Those who question my decision-making still question my decision-making, and I love debate. It's something that I am truly attracted to the job to do. I love preparation for debate. I love delivering a debate. And those who don't support me, I only ask that perhaps that over time, watching me in the role and observing me in the role, that they'll come to respect my process.
Mm-hmm.
We may not always see eye to eye politically, and that's okay. It's a big, diverse world, and I try to respect all opinions, including those that some may seem are my opponents. I try to respect those opinions as long as they're being grounded in a logical debate that is not personal. I am happy to debate ideals.
Have you changed minds? Like, has someone come up to you and said, you know, I didn't agree with you on this point, but you managed to change my mind?
Yeah, I think something in the first term election, you really just have to run on a few. You really keep your platform limited, just because there's only so much time to spend with each individual person. So you, for me, it was the top five issues that I saw that I went after in my first term, and you don't have time to show every single person at the doorstep your depth. So the fact that I am an environmental scientist, that I work with species at risk and rare and endangered fish across the country. I work for renewable energy, a hydroelectric generator in the province, and I manage national level efforts as part of the Canadian Hydropower Association with ministers in Ottawa. I chair a national working group on Fisheries Act policy and environmental policy. Those are things that I didn't have a time to emphasize apart from my resume in the last election. You really need to be in the role to be able to show over time your grasp of environmental policy, renewable energy, even climate change mitigation and climate change goals. Those are all things that I have a lot to offer on. But in an election, you know, you're focusing on the front door issues that people care about. And at times it is environment, but at the same time, being in the role for 4 years has allowed me to show that depth. To that point, yes, I've had a lot of people walk up to me and say, we didn't realize that you had all these layers in an election. But let's face
right.
it, during a mayoral election, a municipal election, it's about the mayor's race. And the councillors are very important, and we're trying to put our ideas and thoughts forward. But you have to be aware that you are in the shadow of a mayor's race, and you're running your campaign, but you're trying not to enter into the fray of the mayor's race as much as you can. You want to align with your community and support them and show them that you are a competent, for me, a very important one, is an independent, competent decision maker.
Even in this race, though, because it seems like the action is all on the councillor's side, where with the exception of Ward 5, all the other wards have at least five contenders in it, and your ward has seven or eight contenders in it. It just seems like, you know, maybe the mayor's race in this one is an afterthought. You can run that race.
Perhaps.
The council aspect.
I'm trying my best to not add commentary to the mayor's race.
Sure.
The mayor and the challenger have their own race to run.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to make sure that I'm giving that space to do it. But at the local level, it is. Municipal politics is fiercely local. Mm-hmm. Fiercely local. Again, people don't necessarily want my opinion on provincial and federal politics. I see a lot of, I don't know if it's for lack of content or just for a lack of interest, but I see a lot of candidates weighing in on upper levels of government.
Right.
And the first thought that comes to mind is, why would you do that?
Mm-hmm.
But secondly, if you're thinking about the city as a whole, and the city as a reputational body, and the city with a council that speaks together as a unified council, having members of that council politicize other levels of government while sitting in a chair around a team of 13 people, it really does impact our city in terms of the relationships we need to maintain with upper levels of government, in terms of decorum, how we present ourselves. And upper levels of government watch these things, right? They are watching, they're observing, they're managing relationships. And that's why I've always tried to, best of my ability, unless it's really going to be impacting the city of Guelph, and I can name an example, but unless it's really going to impact our city, I try to keep my opinions of upper levels of government to myself, not just because of me personally, but because it's a betterment for the group, for the 13 of us around the council.
The flip side of that too is that you have voters wanting to put you in a box, because the nature of municipal politics is it's nonpartisan, there are no parties, but people come to understand politics by whether you're Team Orange or Team Blue or Team Red.
Right. So you're right. But I am privileged to have a good relationship with our MP, Lloyd Longfield. I have a good relationship with Mike Schreiner. I also have good relationships with some of the conservative candidates. So I don't really see the need to enter into those conversations around the municipal horseshoe, because I am privileged to have good working relationships with a number of different political entities.
Maybe to wrap up, and maybe for the edification for whoever ends up on council next term, you were talking about the pressures and the challenges of trying to stay true to yourself once you go from a candidate to an elected official. What are some of those pressures?
Well, you have to be really cognizant of your time, of your strengths, of your weaknesses. Time management and information management is so important in this job. So from that point, you have to build friendships around the council horseshoe. You have to build trusting relationships. At some point in time, a counselor will come to you and say, hey, did you catch this in the report? And you may have missed it. And so you have those trusting relationships that help build you up as a candidate or as a counselor. So those things, I would give to any candidate: be ready, you know, set aside 20 hours a week for the first 6 months to get on top of the information, because the information is a tidal wave when it comes at you.
And that was Councillor Dan Gibson, presently running for re-election in Ward 1. We're going to come back after the break and listen to another Ward 1 candidate, Charlene Downey. Big week for Scotty's decision making process.
Oh yeah, I'll be listening very closely.
Alright, we're going to play some music and then be right back. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
Carlo, an album new to the station, and that song was called Meathead.
It's a good message we're sending out to our local candidates, pushing this for change.
Yeah, that wasn't intentional. I just really liked the groove. Or did I?
You like the 60s flavor stuff.
Yes, anything with a black dot on it, safari, which is instrumental, is on my list. So.
Cool. So we're going to keep going on with our council candidate interviews. We're just going to run through sort of the next three. So when you hear like the change of voice, you will hopefully understand it's a new candidate. So we have Ward 1 challenger Charlene Downey, and then we will have, actually this works so well because we have a female voice, male voice, and female voice. So
perfect.
Charlene Downey, Ward 2 incumbent James Gordon, and Ward 6 challenger Dominique O'Rourke. And we will come back to close out the show when they are done.
We just came from the Safe Consumption site. We did the tour that they're doing every Friday. And of course, this is on Ward 1 issue because...
Well, it's all of Guelph issue. Sure. It's not just Ward 1.
Yeah.
But because most of the services are available in Ward 1, whether we're talking about the safe injection site or the overdose prevention site, the Life Center, Hope House, Chalmers, the Bench, mm-hmm. there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to pay attention to what's been happening with the safe injection site, with the Ford government, and kind of putting, although I have to be honest, I didn't know that it was always meant to be temporary. Mm-hmm. So that actually gives a little bit of pressure, or a relief some of the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt good about that.
Mm-hmm. It's just interesting because I think a lot of wards in Guelph are united in a common theme. You know, when you go to Ward 5, that's the university. When you go to Ward 6, that's, you know, 20 years of development in town. You know, Ward 4 is, you know, 40 years of development. Ward 1 is you start from downtown and then you go out to all these new areas
that are less than
10 years old. And I think your challenge is how do you represent someone who lives downtown while at the same time representing someone who lives out by Watson Parkway?
We truly do have four very distinct neighborhoods through downtown, the Ward, St. George, St. Patrick's, and then we move into the East End. I think what it comes down to is listening. I can't walk into this, and I haven't walked into this with my agenda. I have been trying to talk to everybody I can to find out what is going on, how can I help. I've already been having meetings with City Hall, making the phone calls, emails, because things are happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go to Mico Valeriot Park, where there's an elder box beetle infestation, versus going to the East End where we still have no commercial node, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do about that? And, you know, let's have the conversation. Let's see what we as a city can do instead of waiting for developers to develop.
What's the beetle problem?
Oh, my word. Have you seen
those? I've heard the beetle problem.
So go around Mico Valeriot Park. Okay. So it's on Elizabeth and Stevenson, and they're redoing the park. And there's some really old, beautiful Manitoba maple trees there that are completely infested with these beetles, little black beetles with red marks on it, and they have completely taken over the backyards of almost the entire, that section of the ward,
mm-hmm.
to the point where, like, they're covering the house.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple residents have been saying, hey, there's a problem here because these beetles also bite, but they're having, there's a wall that's happening when they hit City Hall.
Right.
So I've been trying to bridge that and say, look, this is an issue. If we're going to be opening this park to children, we need to deal with this infestation.
So you just said you didn't come into this with an agenda. So I think that makes me curious about why you wanted to run for city council.
It's a big story.
Okay.
When I was about 17, my dad took me to City Hall.
Okay.
In Scarborough. I can still remember the smell of the new rug that had just been placed. I know, it was incredible. It was one of those experiences that you just remember. And he had issues with talking. He had meant to delegate because he had a house that he wanted to turn over to social housing. And he couldn't. He became incredibly frustrated with what he perceived to be the power and the separation that he got frustrated and he had to leave. And it struck me that that was just wrong. I didn't understand at 17 how it was wrong, but I understand now. Municipal government is the only level of government that is truly accessible. So for me to walk in to this election saying, this is my agenda, I feel to me it's counterproductive. It's counter to what it means to be. So go back a little bit. So 25 years ago when I moved to Guelph, I started serving right away. I've always been a servant at heart, whether I was, you know, the kindergarten helper in the public school. But coming here, I started with Action Read, Teenage Parents. I was actually volunteering with Rogers, videotaping when Joe Young was mayor.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, it just planted another seed, right? You know, this is really interesting. I like the service part of this. And then I went to Teachers College, 20 years. And 10 years volunteering at the Life Center. So really understanding, we're all one step away from needing a situation like the Life Center, or needing a place like the Life Center.
Right.
One bad decision, one economical struggle, it's that close. So for me, always being a servant at heart and being in this situation right now in my life where I've just left teaching after 20 years, where my kids are 20, 18, and 16, it's like I'm ready to commit myself to something, and this is what I've chosen to do. Mm-hmm. I've always served Guelph from the time I got here. This is just the next step up.
Are you an idealist?
No, I am very pragmatic, very much so. When I decided to do this, I started looking at bylaws. Yes, groundwater is incredibly important, incredibly. I mean, we are the only municipality in Canada that relies on groundwater. Mm-hmm. But I like to think that we are all on the same page when it's about protecting the groundwater. Mm-hmm. We kind of require groundwater. It's an important thing, especially in the heat of this summer. Mm-hmm. And I also like to think that we're all on board that transit needs some work. I've talked to Robin, the
transit manager.
Yes, he is saying the same things that people who are having problems with transit are saying. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I get that. So what I look at is how do we as a city change, be proactive? And what it has to come down to is how does a city manage a city? And I manage the city through bylaws. Mm-hmm. So that's what I've been looking at, so I can understand them because they're in all that legalese, you know, two university degrees and holy doodles. But it's critical to understand the bylaw component. Mm-hmm. It's how we deal with housing. It's how we deal with budget. It's how we deal with development. So, I mean, am I going to pretend I understand it all? No. But this is what I'm trying to understand. That's what my focus has been.
Is that because one certain bylaw is such a big issue in Ward 1 right now?
So, I understand what you're referring to, and I am sympathetic to the driveway issue that is going on in the east end of Ward 1, though I will say that it is not a Ward 1 issue. It is across, because what has happened is that there's been a miscommunication, this is called a miscommunication, between developers, real estate, the city, and the homeowner. That nobody has been looking at that bylaw and really being honest and truthful with the person who owns it. Right. So a house the driveway got extended. They didn't understand that it was a confliction in the bylaw. Then the house got sold later on, and somebody else has inherited this problem.
Right.
So this has happened throughout all of Guelph. But for me, when I look at this, it's like, okay, yes, I'm sympathetic to this. I start looking at the other parts of the bylaw, of that particular bylaw, and I see that in an R2, R3 dwelling, so a single family or a semi-detached, if you have an accessory apartment, you have to have a minimum of 3 parking spaces.
Right.
And I know of at least 2 people just within my circle who have had to kick out long-term tenants because they do not have a 3rd parking space. To me, this is also a very critical issue, because we are in a housing crisis, and traditionally basement apartments are accessible. So this is some of the things I've been looking at, because I believe cities in general, and Guelph is one of them, have this, we've been feeling like, or at least presenting, that we are a princess or damsel in distress, waiting for the feds, the province, or development to solve our problems. Mm. I like the idea of being my own dragon-slaying princess. So I've been looking at what can we do right now to solve the current problems?
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. I guess maybe to wrap this up, having covered a few elections myself, I feel that, and this is nothing against one candidate or another, but you know, we have big visions, big ideas, but you know, the realities of everyday governance force some of those ideas to, you know, take the back seat. So, you know, I hear your passion on that. So how do you keep things on the front burner and manage the day-to-day expectations or whatever, you know, the unexpected that happens?
Oh, and the unexpected will happen. I mean, look, we have 6 developments, maybe even 7 now, on the books for just the ward.
Mm-hmm.
And Imico coming up, Baker Street coming up, Wyndham. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening in the very, very near future.
To start with, I put this question to Councillors Gibson and McKinnon earlier this year,
because
they, like you, were rookies
right.
in 2014.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But working on council the last 4 years, has that turned out the way you envisioned? Not necessarily working on the particular issues, but no, the way...
The job?
The job, yeah.
Yeah. I probably was naive going in, but it does claim to be a part-time job. And you can see better than others. Yeah. That's just not true. It means part-time pay.
Yeah.
And I think... the other aspect of the job is I've been self-employed all my life. That I made it to the age of 59 before I was elected to council, and that's my first actual paycheck I ever had in my life.
Right.
So I, again, was naive, thinking, noticing how slowly the wheels of bureaucracy work, because as a self-employed person, you just see a task and you find a way to get it done.
Right.
But on council, as you know... through the committee stage and meetings and coming back and forth, and I at the beginning I thought, geez, I'm not getting anything done, and then when you look at it, well, I guess I am, but it's at a different pace than I expected.
So having said that, do you consider yourself sort of like older and wiser in that respect now, like in terms of like going in for re-election? And I know this, like you ran for provincial government twice, so you were itching to sort of get in on that level to be one of the decision makers.
Sure.
So, you know, how does that change your thinking in running this time?
Oh, I think the one reason I decided to run again, it wasn't just despite what I just said, it's not too, there are encouraging signs that yes, at that, it's a very grassroots level, and yes, you can actually get things done. And the things you're getting done actually relate to people's everyday lives more than other levels of government. So being able to facilitate some changes and some policy that will help the well-being of our city does seem possible. And I think the itchy part is, well, boy, I think I've getting towards figuring it out. I've got a lot more work to do.
Right.
And I've got 4 more years to do it if I get reelected, and I think I would hit the ground running faster having that experience, and I think I have a clearer path in front of me as how I can be the most effective that I can be.
Mm-hmm. Having said all that, you are in the rare condition in this election, you are running in a ward that has one open seat, so your incumbency helps you a bit more, because you don't have a ward mate you're running against.
Sure.
But I did want to talk about your relationship with Andy, because Andy's always been, he hasn't been the wave maker on council.
No.
He's always been enjoying, you know, the observer role, the referee role very much. And I'm wondering, because, you know, you talk a lot in council about coordinating with Andy.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Sure. I think you've made a pretty accurate assessment. So I think Andy and I found a way to have a working relationship, and there were things that he was more effective at than me. Like if you had a pothole in your driveway, he'd be there at your driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes maybe we complimented each other because I was more of a big picture guy.
Right.
Okay, well, let's look at why there's potholes in the city instead of fixing that particular one.
Right.
I think it was a good blend that way. But having someone that did take a bit of a back seat, sometimes I felt a little pressure that, okay, am I carrying the load here? Mm. But all in all, I think he, you know, we found a way to get the job done together.
Well, it's interesting saying that because, you know, we talk a lot about, do we still want a city council where there's two part-time councillors versus having a full-time councillor. And what it sounds like there is like you and Andy, given your own personalities and interests and dynamics, sort of were two part-time councillors that made the whole.
I think that's probably right. And but that would be an unusual combination.
Right.
And it's funny, I often say to people that ask me, I think our city is big enough that it should be a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
The irony is, if it were, I'm not sure I'd want it.
Right.
Because I've got another career, too, that still enlivens me. Doesn't enrich me, but it enlivens me.
At least not the fiduciary.
No, yeah, that's right.
Spiritually
enriching. Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I can see, you know, you just made a correct assessment too. I think somehow we found a way to get the task done. We are also one of the only cities around our size that there are no staff that are dedicated to counselors. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I look with envy at a city where there's a full-time counselor, but also they have maybe a full-time or a part-time position of someone that's an executive assistant or administrator. Because sometimes we all get bogged down in the paperwork.
You have to carry your own gear.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think we would be more effective if there was that help. And I see arguments both ways, but also you can look at the current makeup of council, which I hope changes its look a little bit, that if you are someone that's capable of taking on a part-time job, it usually means it's someone that's retired, or it's someone like me who has a flexible enough other job that they can work around it.
Right.
But if you were young, had a family and a mortgage, and trying to job, like, I can't think of what kind of regular career you could say to your boss, well, I'm going to be away a lot from this job. So,
at the town hall.
So I think if it was full-time, you could make a living from it, and that might change the look of who applies to who wants to be a candidate and who we might see. And I think that we might more accurately reflect the diversity of our community, because right now we are a bunch of old white guys. Yeah.
it does strike me, we were talking about big ideas, and that's definitely a big idea. And I asked another candidate this, anyone running for office, is running on the big ideas. I want to change this.
Sure.
I want to change that. But then when you sort of get on council, someone wants to build this high rise.
Right.
Someone needs to deal with these over-enforcement of driveways.
Yeah.
Just stuff off the top of my head. But in terms of looking back on your tenure and where you want to go, how do you balance those two?
Yeah, I think it's actually learning the value of the little stuff is just as important as the big stuff. It just, little is a demeaning term for it. It means it's more particular or localized or something that would maybe only affect a neighborhood. And as sort of I realize that I am kind of a big picture guy. So that's been a learning to go, well, how does this, what we're calling a little picture, how does that fit within the big picture in the framework? And I'll use your example of voting on a high rise. Because last night, so I was one of only two councillors that voted against the development at 71 Wyndham, that they had asked for four stories higher than they did before. In the big picture, I get really tired of saying every time out, wait a minute, we have a robust master plan that took us years and lots of money to develop, and it has a height limit. And every time a development proposal comes forward, they ask for an exemption.
Right.
And at some point, that big picture is, sorry, this is the plan, and if you're going to give us an extra $250,000, that's what I think people got excited about last night, but we're still essentially breaking a rule that was created for the betterment of the entire city, for the well-being.
Right, right, right.
So that's the way you have to balance, though, and it was a localized issue, and perhaps the footprint and everything they designed actually made sense there. But I think it was one too many for me. I thought, okay, here we go again. We're going bigger. There's no affordable housing in it. And how are we going to make sure with examples like that, that we move towards big picture policy that addresses that more aggressively?
Mm-hmm. Do you have any solutions you want to share?
For that particular issue?
Yeah.
For the housing, you might have seen me last night. My question was a bit facetious about what percentage of affordable housing would be, because I knew that the answer would be zero.
Right.
The answer doesn't have to be zero if we as a city step up the gap that the province seems to be ignoring, that if you want a building permit, you have to have 12% of the units do need to be qualified as affordable, which is, I guess my definition is 10% under market value or some definition. And then we wouldn't have to argue every time. They'd know, I'm applying for a permit, this is what I need to provide.
So maybe, you know, it sounds like you're not well known as the business guy, but no. You are thinking a bit like a businessman.
I suppose so. Yeah, that's right. Well, I'm a small businessman. I'm only 5 foot five and a half. Yeah.
That seems like a good place to
good.
Live. Dominique O'Rourke, you are not a new face to the Guelph community as, you know, a professional or as an advocate. And I think, you know, maybe you might want to correct me, but I think at every point there's a point where someone who's, you know, part of the community wants to take the next level and make the jump to city council. So why have you decided that now's the time for you to make the jump and try and your hand at actual governance?
Well, thanks so much for the opportunity to chat. So I moved to Guelph in 1997 to work for the Cooperators, and I've worked there in public affairs. I was the director of public affairs. I did my master's degree at the University of Guelph. I've been doing volunteer work primarily for the Guelph Community Foundation for 10 years. So I really love this community. I just wrote Vital Signs with Toward Common Ground and CESI last year. So
which was part of the Guelph Politicast.
Which was part of the Guelph Politicast, that's right. I'm sure it was your hit podcast.
Oh, sure, yeah. You had the Politicast for sure.
And and so it is I think we're at an interesting point in our history where we're just about to develop the last greenfield, which is in Ward 6, which is where I've been living for the past, you know, 18 years. I see a lot of plans that are in place, but I'd like to see more movement on those. We're really feeling the impact of intensification in the South End, particularly on Gordon Street. Mm-hmm. So I would like to see us have a holistic view of the entire city. And yes, Places to Grow tells us that we have to intensify, but I'd like a more global approach to where that intensification is going. And I would like to be a part of really creating something exciting and sustainable in Claire Maltby. So I think in the immediate, it is about responding to the infrastructure needs of the South End, so the South End Rec Center and something around roads. And then in the longer term, it's about what is our vision for where we want to be and what is our vision for Claire Maltby. So I feel that at this point in my professional career, educational background, community involvement, and the age my kids are at, I think I can really contribute to council. I'm independent, so I want to look at every issue based on the facts. I'm hugely collaborative, and I've got a lot of commitment to Ward 6 and to the city.
Since you mentioned Claire Maltby rather prominently there, I mean, that's something that's already in progress. So is your thinking that that process is kind of going in the wrong direction right now and we should start again from scratch, or is, you know, what's the maneuver there to move to something that maybe is more appealing to you and some of the people you've been talking to?
Right. So let me give you another example. The Guelph Innovation District, right, has won awards for sustainable innovation, for complete communities, for main streets. We don't see any of that in the plan for Claire Maltby. Mm. So this is a preliminary plan with environmental information still to come. But what I'd really like to see is I'd like to see that same kind of thinking and excitement around Claire Maltby. Mm-hmm. Other cities have, you know, Uptown Waterloo, or every community has a reason to attract people from the whole city to go there. Right. And I'd really like to see that in Claire Maltby because, you know, people in the South are real Guelphites. We go to all other kinds of parts of town. And we'd really like to showcase the South End, and Claire Maltby is an opportunity to do that. So I don't believe things are set in stone. There's still a lot of work to be done on zoning. I really want to rethink the intensification along Gordon Street, though, which calls for 14 to 16 story buildings as our green gateway. And that doesn't feel right to me, and I would like to hear more from the community on that, but I think there's room to modify those plans.
Mm-hmm. Part of that, too, is, you know, sort of taking these as they come, and it seems like it's hard to look at the whole development picture because all these plans sort of come one at a time from different developers. So I guess one of the obvious questions is, in terms of balancing that long-term vision and that short-term immediacy of, you know, Guelph's open for business, you know, we need to intensify, Places to Grow is a factor, of course. How do we balance all those commitments?
So I think it's several things. One, though, is the city, through its official plan, draws the sandbox, provides clear guidelines as to what we want to see where. And I think if there was more clarity in that respect, then developers would know what the rules of the game are, and hopefully there would be less back and forth. And I think residents also would have a clear understanding of what the plan is, because there's no question that back and forth is expensive for everybody, for city staff, for developers, for the people who end up living in those places. Another thing that's missing in Claremont is any kind of employment. And when I spoke to City Council, they also didn't pencil in the South End Rec Center. So we need to step back, have a whole city view of things so that we're sure that connectivity works, that we're putting intensification close to the rec center, that the roads connect, that the transit works. So to your point, we need to look at the whole city and what is attractive in each ward and you know, look at a plan for the whole thing.
Okay. Let me rephrase something this way too, because I think one of the issues have is that we have developers coming forward with plans. Plans meet the specifications of staff, or, you know, staff is willing to let certain things be exempt, you know, in the interest of just sort of getting going on a development project. But I think what's missing here is maybe a piece that involves the community. I think that a lot of times when we hear about these big projects come forward, and one of the things I hear just sitting at the media table is people like, I heard about this yesterday, I heard about this you know, a week ago, and this is a surprise to me. And, you know, it just seems like the old-fashioned living within 500 meters of a development isn't working anymore. So how do we encourage that better communication you're talking about?
Okay, so that's an awesome segue. The three planks for my platform are better development, affordable, sustainable, livable communities, and the third is better communications. So I actually think on Claire Maltby, people have had an opportunity to provide input fairly early in the game that challenges reaching people and having them understand this matters to them. I think the city and the councillors can do a much better job. It is much harder right now without a daily. People have to be engaged. But to your point, that community consultation is really important. And it worked really well downtown with the Metalworks. So I think the more people are aware of what's happening at City Council, the more people are aware of what the plans are. You know, people should look up the intensification plan for Clare Road to Hart's Lane. And there's a lot more intensification coming. People need to be aware that that is really the vision. And if they want to speak up, that now's the time. At the same time, we do need to acknowledge that we're a growing city. There will be intensification. I just think we can be smarter about it and we can spread it out a little bit.
I want to move to a different issue because the mayor, as we're recording this, the mayor released his platform, and the major piece of that seems to be more money for the police department. And I believe, you know, unless I'm mischaracterizing your point of view, you retweeted that and is very supportive of that. I am curious, though, if this is becoming, I don't want to say a wedge, but it does seem to me like there's a lot of back and forth between people who are seeing Guelph as becoming less safe, and sort of the statistics and the other side of that, which is that Guelph is relatively safe in terms of other cities, and some people are sort of seeing that police bump in the budget as kind of maybe an overreaction. So I'm curious about where you're coming from on that.
Sure. So what I'm hearing at the door, right, not from the mayor, not from anybody else, is that people are having lots of break-ins, bikes are being stolen, they don't feel safe, you know, if they come downtown. So people are feeling, there's a different feeling in the air, absolutely. And so speeding is the other one, right? So they're not feeling safe on the road. They're concerned their car is going to be broken into or their garage is going to be broken into. And there is an increase in the crime severity index in Guelph.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter that we're safer than another community. What matters is that you feel safe in your own neighborhood and your own environment. So if we as a society set a norm for a speed limit, we need to enforce that norm. Otherwise, it's meaningless. Part of that is having more police officers to have, you know, issue tickets and to patrol. So the visibility of police is important. The enforcement of the norm is important. It's not the whole solution. It is a part of the solution, and I would support that.
Perhaps to wrap up, you are running, I think, in probably one of the more competitive wards right now. There's definitely a vacancy. You know, if we're not including incumbent candidates, one of the incumbents is running, one of the incumbents is not. So in your pitch to people when you're going door-to-door, what makes Dominique O'Rourke stand out from the pack in terms of being a good city councilor versus anyone else who's on the Ward 6 ballot?
So it's a competitive field. I would ask people to consider that I have an economics degree, a master's degree in leadership, a lot of experience in research, public policy, and building coalitions around issues. I have 20 years of volunteering in the community. I have a good understanding by writing vital signs of what some of the needs are. I am not aligned with any political party or any of the cliques on council. And I'm really listening at the door, and I intend to be a good voice for Ward 6, who's going to look at the issues based on the facts and to really make the best decisions I can for the community where I live.
All right. So that was Charlene Downey, James Gordon, Dominique Rourke. Before the musical break, that was Dan Gibson there. So that's the first four out of 30-some-odd.
Potential 30.
Potentially. So, yeah, so we're going to keep this up for the next couple of weeks. I'm not sure if we'll get to everyone. We're going to try and get as many people as possible. Not everyone wants their 10 minutes of fame on the radio.
But if you do, definitely get in touch, because
yes,
we'd love to have you on.
Absolutely.
We will find a slot somehow.
I thought you were going to say, we will find you. No,
we'll find you, and we'll record you.
We can embiggen the show. We've embiggened the show before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go.
That's all right.
Anyway, so yeah, get in touch with us. You can find us at opensourcesguelph.com. You can go to Facebook, Open Sources Newswire. You can go to @OS_Guelph on the Twitters. And you can hear this episode or any previous episode of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com.
And you can stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we will be back here for more Open Sources next Thursday at 5 p.m.